Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, welcome to the Wild Magic School Bus. We're so glad you could come aboard. My name is Connie. And before we begin our adventure, a quick word of warning. This Dungeons & Dragons podcast may contain fantasy violence, language, mature themes, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is always advised. Now, if you're ready, let's buckle up and let the adventure begin.
But I have to, like, I have to say the thing. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wild Magic School Bus, the most unprofessional D&D podcast you will ever hear. I, of course, am your DM, Calvin Piper, and these fine folk play the game of D&D with me. Tonight's prop players, as we go around the table, Drew is remote tonight, so everyone can wave hi to Drew as he is on the little iPad there. Excuse me.
Wait, I do not like being able to be seen by the audience.
You are seen.
State.
You are seen.
You're like right in the middle.
Your cheeks look kind of flush.
Yeah. So I'm also recording that, so I'm gonna maybe put the screenshot like below in like the actual video, so he might be like blown up.
Drew
like,
and bigger. Drew.
Yeah, just like a bigger version of Drew on here. So you will be seen, Drew. Don't you worry. But
what that?
Zach is not with us tonight. He is currently doing, would you say, Tech Week?
I think that's what they call it.
That might be what they call it. We'll have to ask him. He's doing Tech Week because he is an actor and he is in a musical that is going to be premiering here in Kansas City soon. So as we go around the table and introduce ourselves, if you could fantasy book Zach in a musical or a movie, I'll make it a little bit easier, what would that be? Cool. I would go Phantom of the Opera.
Ooh, nice.
Hi. Christine?
Is he the Phantom?
I was gonna have a faster one, but no, I'd put him as Raoul. I'd put him as the guy.
The Phantom in the opera?
No, the like
he's the opera in the opera.
The love interest of Christina in the
because who is the Phantom in the opera?
Who is the Phantom in the opera?
No, Christina is the Phantom in the opera.
No, she's not. Is the Phantom is the Phantom?
It's
in the
it's
opera.
Whom is
whom it
whom much is that doggy in the wind? Never mind. We're getting off track here.
Yes. Hi, I'm Will. I play Varius, the Tabaxi sorcerer. I would really love to see Zach Kuyat as Troy Bolton in High School Musical.
Oh, dang.
Ooh, okay.
I think he could pull off the jumper.
Oh, you know he could.
Dude, he'd crush.
Absolutely.
He would crush. And his hair already looks like Zac Efron in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got, it's long enough. He could pull it back if he wanted to, but he keeps it kind of...
Bet on it.
Mm-hmm. Zach has a, like, 1995 to 2005... 20-something-year-old playing teenager look. That's that is
100%.
Is there a Degrassi the musical?
He's the Corbin Blue of 2024, really.
I am Maddie B, and I play Wyatt Masterson, the Heron Gone Rogue. I'm not a big musical guy, but I would maybe say Sweeney Todd.
Mm-hmm. I like
good
that.
Call.
I like that.
Good call.
Also, The Greatest Showman is an acceptable answer. Anytime you're talking about a musical and you don't know what to say, just say it.
True. I just think I would have enjoyed seeing him as Sweeney Todd.
As Zac Efron.
In Sweeney Todd.
Playing Troy Bolton as Sweeney Todd. What if he was every character in The Greatest Showman?
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my gosh.
A one-man Greatest Showman?
Yeah. The Greatest Showman.
That sounds like a disaster, but I want I'd to see it.
I'd watch that so hard.
I'd watch the hell out of that.
Zach Galifianakis presents the greatest show,
oh,
man.
Oh, my gosh. Hi. I am Michelle. I play Nell, and I'm going to say I want to see Zach in, I'm going to say Cats. I think he'd make a fantastic cat.
How dare you?
Just incredible.
Just slinking around.
Name one.
Skimbleshanks. Got it.
Nice.
Right. Did you Google
Mungo
that?
Jerry.
Huh?
Did you Google that?
No.
Isn't one of them like Jug? No.
Jungle Knot.
You're thinking of the Aristocats.
Oh, yeah, that's
probably. Grisabella. Mr. Mistopheles.
Yeah.
Bumbalarina. Rumpelteazer. Demeter. Jelly Lorum, one word. Mungo Jerry, also one word. The Rum Tum Tugger. The Glamour Cat.
Those are some weird names.
McCavity.
Your cavity, dude?
It's M-A cavity.
McCavity.
Yeah. Asparagus, a.k.a. Gus, the theater cat.
Mm.
There's
Gus
Zach.
There's Zach, Gus, the theater
I don't
cat.
Like that Bumble Arena is a babe.
What?
Very
That's
sharp features.
Totally a babe name.
Victoria. That's... Mr. Mistopheles looks terrifying.
All right, Mr. Mistopheles is amazing.
Hey, everybody, this is Drew. I play Constance, Connie the Reach, Connie the Rocket. Brava. I'm not feeling too well. I've got two, and you have to, you know, you have to go with it, because I'm feeling poorly. So I think I would like to see him play... Kylo Ren.
Okay.
But not Kylo Ren. Ben Solo.
Okay.
In like a prequel, like explaining, you know, Luke and Kylo's relationship. Done by what's his name?
Zac Efron.
Capra? Okay, cool.
No, he said Zac Efron.
The whole thing's written by Zac Efron.
Sure.
Actually, there is a play that just closed called Some Like It Hot, which is based on my favorite movie of all time. And
Fahrenheit 451.
I want him to play Josephine, and I will play Daphne.
Oh, you're in it too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Drew, what part can I play? Because I want to be on this now.
Well, if you kick him out, then you'll play Josephine.
Done.
There's only two roles in this movie.
Yeah, you can play Joe.
Okay, cool.
I'll play Jerry. There is actually like an old millionaire guy you can play. That's kind of a fun part.
Done.
I'm done. I'm done.
He's done. He's finished. He's moving on.
Hi, my name is Matt. I play Zook Magoop, Mill Tortle Wizard 6, level 6. I haven't been here in over a month, so if you started listening after the one-shot Christmas special, don't know why you would start now here, but
starting just in the middle of stuff.
Yep.
We were speculating if you would quit.
No. Feels like I did. It's been a long time.
Long time.
I was also going to go with a feline musical of sorts and choose The Lion King.
Ooh.
I was thinking young Simba, or more so.
And
the
then Drew could play
adult Simba.
Not young Simba. How much adult Simba? He's not at his computer right now.
It's fine.
I guess he could play both roles of Simba.
He could.
Yeah.
Yeah, he could pretty easily.
He could
make it work.
Do you know they're trying to do like a prequel Lion King, like early Mufasa days?
Young Foss?
Yeah.
Just more
starring
lions?
Michael Fassbender?
I don't know who they're going to do, but
that'd be
yeah.
Cool. Fantasy book. That'd be
but yeah,
sweet.
I guess that, yeah, I guess they're trying to, I guess that's, it might happen. I don't know.
I mean, I'd
but,
watch it.
Yeah, it looks like it'd be
Rafiki
cool. So.
In his
Ooh,
teens.
Brian Rafiki, that's.
Who plays Rafiki?
In this room?
No.
Oh.
In general.
Troy Bolton.
Stop it.
all right.
His name is Childish Gambino.
So homegirl, just drop it like
I almost said drop it like the NASDAQ.
right, we're going to teach Drew about the mute button. And while we're doing that, we're going to go ahead and jump into episode 22 of the Wild Magic School Bus.
We're in double digits now.
Here we are.
The last I have is 8.
So the last time we were here, the band of adventurers had overcome quite a few bizarre scenarios, starting with drawing cards from the deck of many things and having not only just these insane twists of fate, but lives almost lost in some aspects. And then when all of it was said and done, the deck was tucked away safely so that it could do no more harm. Except that it did. Because one well-paid thief swiped the cards from Kestis' pack and brought them to none other than Barrios, who then returned them promptly to Quentin Togglepocket, owner of the Afterlife Casino. After trying to convince Togglepocket to maybe go a little easy on his friends for their indiscretion, I think that's the word. Anyhow, he drew a card with Quentin to see if that would help smooth things over. A lucky persuasion roll and cards were drawn. The fate of Quentin is unknown, but Barrios was then shunted into the Feywild, where he had an indeterminate amount of time where he spent wandering and seeking, ended up running into some fine folk and a somewhat familiar entity known as Luna. After being sent back to his own world, he landed face first on the dinner table of the Bravas compound, where everyone else was enjoying the evening meal on the second night of the people's celebration.
Where he was promptly eaten.
Where he was eaten by everybody. After that was smoothed over, there was the conversation that Connie then began to have with everybody and Wyatt, inviting Wyatt to become an associate of the Brava family. Wyatt accepted this offer and became a marked individual bearing the small leaf-like tattoo on his hand. And then Connie took the conversation away from everybody else and had a brief conversation with his mom, revealing to her that he discovered that his uncle was indeed behind some of the nefarious acts. He believed that his uncle was behind many of the nefarious acts that have taken place in the last few days. He confided this in his mom, who urged him to be cautious, which he promised he'd do. And that is where... Oh, and then there was a terse conversation between Wyatt and Connie about how Wyatt said, "You should have told me beforehand, you son of a bitch," I think. Went that way. I don't know.
Gasp.
Gasp. But that is where we find ourselves tonight, with everyone having a full rest and waking up the third and final day of the People's Celebration. Now, for those of you who are, for those of you who don't know what's happening on the third day, I will quickly explain. The biggest things that are happening today are the obvious final fight between Connie the Reach and Hibiscus Quencher, the rematch of the century, as people are calling it. It's surprisingly been well advertised, so it's becoming quite a big thing. You can see these magical flyers have pretty much plastered themselves to every corner. Very old, like Apollo Creed style, like fight of the century. Oh, rest in peace, Carl Winters. And so that is happening tonight. That's the fight of the century, and then after that, the celebration actually takes place, where the ceremony of the transference occurs and everyone witnesses it, and it's a great thing. And then the evening is filled with frivolity and celebration and great times. And that will conclude the people's celebration. So the day is yours to do whatever it is you'd like to do. And then when everyone's ready, we will go ahead and move towards the fight of the century with Connie and his rival Hibiscus.
That was Rihanna, not Beyonce.
What?
the song I was thinking of.
Yeah. Trio.
Well, I don't really have any plans for today other than to exist and maybe talk to some people.
That's a fair thing to do.
Well, I think I should probably at least tweak a few things about Connie's outfit tonight if my name's going to be attached to it. So, Connie, what would you like in an outfit? I'm thinking singlet. I'm thinking skin. I'm thinking shimmer.
Yeah, I love all of that. That's kind of how I'm feeling right now.
All right.
You know, give me a little pre-fight shrimp and some, you know, real skimpy, flashy outfit, and I think we're good to go.
The shrimp will inspire it, like a crustacean, an exoskeleton, full of glitter. You'll have a
Connie
tail.
Connie the shrimp.
Connie the shrimp.
I think Zook still has some in his shell from, like, 20 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Make a constitution saving throw.
Shellfish Connie.
No, I mean, I think you know, we stick with Connie the Reach, Connie the... What was I going by recently? The...
Comet.
Connie the Comet?
Well, if we're going to go with Connie the Reach, there are things called mantis shrimp, and they've got a wicked punch on them, and they've got reach. So maybe...
Ooh,
we'll model it
out like
mantis
that.
Shrimp.
Yeah. It could be like some prop gloves that I have, like.
So you're just gonna casually just throw mantis shrimp in my world now?
Like right
just
before the fight, I toss them off, you know.
So the only issue with that though is, and I kind of like seize up for a second. The mantis shrimp has the ability to see colors that don't exist in the human planet in our prism, so you won't be able to match the color scheme exactly. I don't know what just happened. But bear that in mind while you're threading today.
All right.
Could that be some kind of advantage to us? Like, maybe you weave the magic of the mantis shrimp into the outfit, and then I can see colors.
Again, doesn't exist in my world, but go for it.
He's been eating scrimps since episode 11.
I'm having a hard time hearing Calvin deny the things that I'm saying.
That's true. You are the furthest away from the iPad.
If you're
going to
tell me no, can you speak up and say it clearly?
No!
Okay.
No, the rabbits were chewing on the cord. He was yelling at one of the rabbits.
God damn it, that's good. Okay, so you are going to go ahead and attempt to recreate an outfit for him. Go ahead and roll a performance check for me as you're commencing this activity for the day.
All right, let's do it. 25?
25, flawlessly. You create the most illustrious, not only boxing attire for him, but entrance attire as well, stuff that can be quickly disrobed as he's entering the ring. It's the stuff of legends. It's going to look great.
As he walks, it has some perpetual motion to it, so there's like little punching gloves going on above his head like this.
Of course there is.
Is there like a pow sign?
Yeah.
Bam.
Pow, pow.
Whip. Of course there
Swip.
Is.
Swip.
Grab.
Schwa.
I feel like I'm not even going to have to fight wearing this thing.
And with that, I'll go ahead and I'll give you Scuff Links, which grants you advantage on all attack rolls until the end of your turn.
Remind me to use them.
I will do my best.
Okay.
Have you spoken with Hibiscus about the fight's arrangement, or are you going to be, you know, fighting for real?
It's a legit fight. Now, hold on. I should probably ask him.
He calls Janet into the room. Hey, Hibiscus.
Let me consult my notes.
The last conversations that you had with Uncle Zoo, essentially the idea was that you were going to take the fall so that this upcoming fight was going to be your grand return to glory. So, okay. Yeah, it's fixed.
Okay.
So that's the idea. Yeah. So.
Yeah, but, no, it's fixed. I mean, it's real. But wink, wink, wink.
Oh, Drew, think of the kids in Blue Room that always made your head explode. That's how you're behaving in Small Group right now.
All right, so...
Yeah. And?
As everyone is gathering that stuff, as you are gathering that stuff, that's going to take you most of the day to kind of prepare that and get that done. Your unheard servant is definitely going to be busy at work, darning needles, preparing spools for you, bringing bolts of fabric down from your little area and helping you prepare. Are you doing this in your shop or your little apartment, or are you bringing this all to the compound? What do you?
No, I'll do it in my shop.
Okay, so you spend. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a jaunt to get there and back, but there's enough transportation in the city. Actually, Kestis will volunteer to. I'll go ahead and ride you with me. You can hop on. Let's go. And he'll take you and let you ride him.
I'm going to put lots of perplexing cutouts in his outfit. You're not going to be able to explain or have any rhyme or reason as to why his patch of skin is showing. He's going to love it.
Come on. As you ride off into the sunset. So that'll keep you preoccupied for a while, but you are still free to be involved in anything else that goes on today.
Did you say darning needles?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Yes.
Am I thinking of this correctly? Darning?
I think it's needles used to
fix socks and stuff. Yeah, they're like to repair. They like to repair threads and stuff a lot of times. So like if you have a hole in a sock, you use a darning needle.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, darning needles. Didn't anyone ever don your socks for you?
No, I explicitly donned my own socks.
Darn.
Does Barry even wear socks?
No, not with this.
He's like a barefoot kind of a guy.
He's showing his... No, he wears shoes, but...
He's showing his little toe beans to the world.
No, he's wearing shoes. He's wearing shoes.
All right. Was...
Wait, what are your hands look like?
I definitely, 100%, picture Matthew McConaughey as this naked, hairless cat.
Yeah.
That's actually not far off.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very cool picture because it makes me realize how much like a hairless cat Matthew McConaughey already looks.
All right.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty good.
I mean, it's all like the angles, like the high cheekbones,
Yeah. What was McConaughey's favorite president?
Tell me.
Lincoln.
Oh, because of the car?
Yeah, because of the commercial.
That was bad.
That was good.
I was just trying to stall while the DM figures out what he's supposed to say.
I thought you were going with like Andrew Garfield because of the cat thing.
Oh.
I was trying to figure out how you're going to make all right sound like a president.
Yeah, me too.
Taft.
All right.
That sounds like a Taft thing.
What's Matthew McConaughey's political leaning? All right.
That's pretty good.
Now, his political leaning is hook 'em horns.
Yeah.
True.
UT football is a religion.
Okay. So that's going to happen with... Kessa is going to help you do that. It's just going to leave... Barros is just kind of hanging around unless something interesting happens in his life, which...
No, yeah, I'm just skipping to the festival.
Doesn't he go by Barrios now?
What's that?
Doesn't he go by Barrios now?
Barrios.
Barrios.
I feel like we're saying the same word.
Barrios is moving throughout the town and just kind of interacting with the festival as a whole, which leaves Zook and Wyatt. Is there anything you guys are attempting to do today as you have the afternoon, early morning and afternoon to explore?
I'd like to imagine, just because I've missed so much, that Zook's like the background character in those movies that's like eating the food and like laughing and reacting to everything that's going on.
You're everyone's
scene. Tonight is all Zook all the time.
Mm-hmm. The entire time. I will tell you though, Matt, as per Zook's kind of proclivity, he has been making a lot of notes and observations about the festival itself, being that there's an abundance of fae in this carnival that has shown up. So you've been making lots of different notes about that. You also spend a lot of time interviewing Barrios. Actually, that'll be something you could do today, too, is also interviewing Barrios about his travel to the Feywild and what that entailed, to the best of your knowledge. So
there's a blinking dog.
Don't all dogs blink?
All of it blinked. It was a full body blink.
Without eyelids.
It's true.
Blinking dog.
There you go.
I think Wyatt's probably... It's been a minute since he's been home, so he's going to run back to the... after the discussion with Connie, mm-hmm. just needs a minute.
Sure.
So he's going to run back to the tavern where he's got his room.
Sure, yeah. You can definitely head back to the tavern. Your room is... in the order that you left it, no one's been there. Are you doing anything? Have you been doing anything specific in here, or are you?
I think while I'm here, Wyatt kind of like walks by, just still kind of perplexed a lot about what's happened and not being able to remember a ton, and so he goes back to his chest to see if there's other things in there that might help him kind of jog his memory a little bit.
Okay. You go back to the chest that you've opened in your recent memory once before, and in it you find... remind me, you've opened this chest before?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you remember what you found in here the first time?
I found like some black clothes and then found a garrote in there.
Okay.
And then that was, I kind of quickly shut it the last time I was in
there.
Gotcha. Dig through it.
Digging, are you going further?
Yes.
Go ahead and make a, this is an easy DC, but go and make an investigation check for me as you're looking through this thing.
Got a 22.
22. With a 22, you move aside some of the clothing, take the box with this bizarre kind of tool and set it aside, and you find a few other small items. It looks to be a pouch with these strange kind of brownish porcelain-looking balls that seem to have been sealed over with some sort of a wax on one end. There's probably about five or six of them in this pouch that you find. You also find a very sturdy, very lightweight kind of a grappling hook. You also find a couple other odd instruments. You find a leather case with a bunch of tools in it that they're small tools that have like weird bends or waves to them. And then you find another hard leather case that has a couple of large rods and a couple of small, looks like pickaxes or like a tined instrument of some kind. None of these strike you as familiar, but they seem to be well used and well maintained. And then you find, with a 22, you're going to find a...
bag of baby carrots.
Yes. You're going to find note. And... the note is a very simple one. It seems to have some information detailing this city for some reason and a couple of names on it, names that you don't recognize. And as you move that note away, with a 22, you can see you're at the bottom of the chest. But you have this feeling that it's not... like, it's shallower inside this chest than when you see it on the outside. You feel like there's more depth to it than what you're seeing right here.
Okay. I'm going to pull those things out and kind of set them to the side.
Sure.
And just clear it and then see if I can maybe like reach around or feel any sort of like button or trigger or anything that would pull the base.
Go ahead and make another investigation check for me. I'll say this one's at advantage because you've discovered it. Yeah. With the 17, you kind of reach into the case and press down on the bottom, which now you see is a false bottom, and it pops up with like some sort of a spring inside, and you're able to kind of lift it up and push it back. And underneath is a very shallow box, but enough to hold a couple of interesting items. The first thing you find is a small scrap of cloth. Kind of like a lavender color. It's torn. It looks as if it was ripped off of something. But it's just a simple old piece of cloth. It's already, already has some fading and some almost like disintegrating of the edges just based on its age. But it is interesting.
Is there any sort of like writing or anything on this?
Not on the fabric, cloth? No. But there is writing on the envelope next to it. This envelope is sealed with a wax seal. It has not been opened. The paper is aged, you would guess, for a while. And even the seal itself, even though it is a sealed envelope, the wax is so old that it is like cracked and brittle. It's not even really holding anything together anymore. What you assume was probably some sort of a reddish wax is now turned almost kind of like a grayish just due to the time it's sat here. But on the envelope itself, there is a name written across it. The name is Elvis.
Did he say Elvis?
Albus.
Albus.
Like an owl bus.
Yes.
Does the name ring any bell at all to me whenever...
Just an actual
make a history check. Make a history check.
History check?
Yeah.
That's not great. It's a 5.
Ooh.
No, not to your knowledge has that name ring a bell to you.
Okay, I'm gonna delicately open up the envelope to see what's in that.
Two things: a small golden locket and a note.
All right, I'm gonna read the note.
The note simply reads, "My dear Al, I don't know if you'll get this. Not sure where you are. Your father won't say much, but assures me that you're safe. I hope this finds you well, and I do hope you'll come visit. You are missed. Love always, Mom."
Doesn't have it's just Mom. It doesn't have any sort of
just other says Mom.
Name of that.
Okay. Just says Mom.
Okay, at this point, I'll just kind of tuck it back into the envelope and put the things all back, not knowing exactly what all this stuff is.
Mm-hmm. As you're setting all the stuff back, you can't help but notice the locket in your hand. It is closed. but there's a little clasp to it that it looks like it can be opened.
Okay. I'll open it, see what it says.
Popping it open, you can see set in there is... when you first open it, there's nothing on one side of it. Nothing appears. But as you open it, there's a strange little like bluish flicker, and then an image of some latent arcane magic appears, and very much like the newspapers in Harry Potter, this kind of silent moving image on the locket. It's a picture of three individuals, all look to be Herringons. One of them is this older gentleman with kind of these tiny round glasses kind of set on top his nose, one ear flopped down, the other straight up, and he's just kind of sitting looking exasperated. But kind of like pointing to whatever the magical equivalent of a camera is. The other individual, she's laughing about something and holding this tiny little bundle of a little baby Herringon who's just erratic and chaotic as all get out. But it seems to be they're trying to get a picture. And while there is chaos in it, you can see that there is they're having fun with it. But yeah, it's just his family of three Herringons. The other side of the locket, whatever was there is gone, but etched into it, like scratched into that side of the locket, there is words. And you have to squint to read them and decipher what they mean, but it looks like an address? An address to a location here in the city. The Hopper.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay. I'm going to close the locket and put it around. Like, is it attached to a necklace?
Oh, yeah. It's got a chain.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, then I'm going to put it around my neck.
Okay.
And then continue to put all my things away. And then as I leave, I'm going to try to go and see if I can find Zook.
Sure. Yeah, you close everything back up, close it up, setting down that first note that you found that has that strange name written across it, and kind of close it and just slide it back. As you step out, go and make a perception check for me.
Earlier you said erratic. I believe it's erratic.
Thank you. Yes. Correct. You are. Do you have inspiration currently? I think you do. I'm not giving any
more.
That's
crazy. You should just give it to me.
Pay forward, you can have my old one.
Thank you.
I still have one. I don't think I earned it.
No, yeah, it's fine. You can have it.
26.
Nice. we haven't done this very often. I'm excited we get to. You don't notice as you leave your room.
With a 26?
With a 26. Across the street. A hooded figure watches you leave from an adjacent balcony.
With a glint of a scope.
And sets down a tiny little mug of something and just watches you as you leave your room.
With a 26,
you do not notice it.
It's Zook. He's in every scene, remember?
Yeah, it's Zook. Just eating the shrimp.
It's tea.
It's just a bowl of pho that he sets down.
But yeah, you do not notice that even with the 26. So...
That's a sneaky boy or girl.
Okay.
That's a sneaky day.
With that, you leave your tavern abode and head back towards the center of the city where the celebration is being held and where you know Zook would probably be.
Oh. Okay. Nell, since she set the unheard servant off to work and he's got all of his plans and stuff out, I'd like to go back and check on the snail stables. The Snequestrian Center.
Yes.
They said that they would have some snegs for me.
I believe it's the Esquestrian Center. Escargot. Oh. Esquestrian.
Well.
Drew, you can have inspiration.
That's not how this works. Okay, so you...
He couldn't hear you, so...
He needs to speak up. I cannot hear... when he's denying people things.
It was the rabbit again.
He didn't deny you.
But if anyone's looking at my character sheet, I do have inspiration.
Yeah, you head to the stables of the Brava compound, and
no, this wasn't the stables, I don't think. This was Dimitri's circus. It was outside.
You're going
of
back
there.
To the circus to talk to the giant snail people there? Okay, yeah. You head there, and you can see. You can see there is. There's a race that had recently concluded, and several of the snails are being sent back to a corral just off from the racetrack area. And there's about three or four individuals who are kind of like standing by the gate, kind of having a conversation as you approach. And they all kind of turn to you and wave. One of them looks to be elven, but the top of their head weirdly resembles a head of cabbage. With like these weird kind of like leafy kind of like things growing out of it. Another one is gnomish in stature, but has arms that are far too big and like long for them. So think like knuckle dragger, but he carries them well, but they're like enormously big for him. And he's also kind of like a blue, like a light blue, but like neon almost. And the third, individual is, I don't know how else to say it other than the creature from the Black Lagoon, like a mer fish person with like weirdly sweaty skin, and large irises that have no pupils.
I love them. Lovely.
Which one of them was it you said that was... viciously whipping the snails, telling the worthless piece of shit to get back in their stalls?
None of them.
Okay.
But as you approach, they all kind of turn to look at you, and the one with the large arms is just like, afternoon to you.
Hello! So I came over here, I think it was just yesterday, the day before. Anyways, I raced one of these snails.
Oh. Did you win?
I did.
Oh, congratulations. Yes.
Well, I was wondering, are any of them available for purchase?
For purchase?
I'm in love with these snails.
They all kind of look at each other and look back at you.
It's not weird. I'm just short and they get around pretty quickly.
No, I completely understand. I mean, we all love the snails too.
And the other two nod their heads enthusiastically.
You have to understand though, We don't own the snails. They're all they're like us, the living, breathing, sentient creatures with their own hopes and dreams, and they do this for the enjoyment of it.
Oh.
Oh, wow, that's really problematic.
Do they ever... Well, I've heard about their species.
Oh, all right.
That they lay an abundance of eggs sometimes. Is that true?
Well, maybe, like, normal... Fae snails are different. They don't...
Snails?
Like, well, they're from the Fae wild, so they're just Fae snails. They don't lay an abundance of eggs. Normally just one at a time, and then they grow from that.
So, if they're sentient, you're saying if they decided they would like, one of them would like to come live with me, that you would just let them go?
Well, I don't see why not. They can make their own, choices.
Take me to the stables.
They all turn around to the pen that's right behind them where all the snails are at.
It's right here.
Well, I don't want to just barge in. It's their house.
Well, you could just knock.
Just say you're there to see Snail Earnhardt.
I mean, Snail Earnhardt or Snail Earnhardt Jr. Raise
hell. Do you say that?
Praise Snail.
do you say that?
For sure.
Yeah. So as you say that, you watches all these like eye stalks like turn to look at you, and one of them pushes through with, and this snail is about the same size as the other ones. His shell is a little bit thicker around the sides, and as he pulls up to you, underneath both his eye stalks are these weird little like fuzzy, like just like poofs right under its eye stalk, and it kind of rolls up to you and kind of blinks at you curiously, and it just... regards you as it pulls up.
I don't know if it would work with these, but I have speak with small beasts, and I can communicate.
Definitely not small beasts. But
simple ideas to small or smaller beasts.
Be my friend forever.
Help as a snail.
You said what?
This snail. It's Calvin as a snail. the thick shell. His thick forearms. The tough support. That his beard.
So, oh my god, that's so true.
I'm going to say snails technically don't know any languages, but these are fae snails, so they're a little bit different.
Yeah.
And so as you are attempting to speak with it, you do hear a voice in your mind where it's like,
are you looking for Snail Earnhardt?
Yes, I am.
That's me.
Snail Earnhardt. Do you have an adventurer spirit?
Do I have an adventurer? Well, of course I do. I love to travel and be a part of this fantastic thing that we do here. You know we like race around, right? Like it's a great little attraction that is.
And I'm here to offer you maybe what can be a mutually beneficial thing if you like racing around. I also like racing around, but on the backs of snails. Snails, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to misspeak.
No, it's quite all right.
But I was hoping maybe you or one of your kind would like to come live with me and come adventure with us.
Oh. Well, that's a mighty fine offer. I can't speak for all my kinfolk, but I could sure shoot and ask them about it, see if any of them were interested.
What about you, Snail?
Oh, wait. You're too kind. No, my adventuring days are far from over. Getting up there in age, so, you know, getting ready for smooth pastures and wet marshes.
I love that for you.
Thank you.
What about Junior?
Well.
What about JR?
Maybe, yes, if you wouldn't mind, if your kind does something like that, if they like to go adventuring, or if that would be something they're interested in, I would adore to have them as company.
Of course, absolutely. Let me speak to him for a moment. If you'll hold here, go ahead and roll a persuasion check for me.
Hell yeah!
No,
29.
Oh nope, you're not getting stuck with Kyle Busch.
I'm surprised. I'm and a little impressed.
Dude, my nose is about to bleed trying to think of goddamn NASCAR racers.
Danica Patrick,
Kurt Busch.
From my hometown.
There you go.
The well's running away.
That's the only one you know.
I'm
Jeff Gordon's the only. I got it. That's it. Yeah, I'm Jeff done. Gordon. I'm out.
Sniff.
Nope.
Sniff snorted.
Nope. Sniff. Not going to happen.
Tignataro.
Snightening Snickween.
Ricky Bobby.
Snicky Snobby.
Fantasy Ricky Bobby.
Snurbo. Yeah.
Snurbo.
Keep this up. I'm
oh no, DM's got a potty. All right, guys, we've got to come up with more names to kill time.
Please, guys, all I want. Okay, hold on.
Snurbo, I think, is the best one so far. That was great.
That's all the racers.
Brock Thorne.
I think Shell on Wheels is a great one.
Oh, my God. Oh,
nails, yeah.
NASCAR racers. Most famous. Come on, Matt, you should have this on lock. You're
NASCAR racers?
Yeah.
Daryl Waltrip.
Yeah, the Daryl Waltrip's one. Yeah.
That's an oldie. I'm going to have a stroke here.
All right. Yeah.
Okay.
Bobby Labonte.
Yeah.
See,
no one. I'm just letting him go. See how many you can pick.
God. Richard Petty.
Tony Stewart.
And the Heartbreakers, dude.
Richard Petty and the Heartbreakers.
I mean, they are absolutely terrible.
Last race with Mary Jane.
Last race with Mary Jane. That's great.
500 laps to kill the bird.
Jimmy's Johnson.
Jimmy's Johnson.
Snoney Snewart.
Here comes Nell Webb on the number 8 Jimmy's Johnson car.
Oh, jeez.
Who was that guy? The Pharma Bro, Martin Crowley, Screlly. I feel like he would want to do NASCAR.
Mm. I don't know what he's talking about.
True. You muted halfway through that sentence.
Yeah, I'm muted halfway through that thought.
Nice.
Okay, so.
For me right now, what we're doing here, it's almost a dream.
Almost.
Mm-hmm.
I thought every week was a dream when we were here.
Well, yeah, in that way. But this is like the kind where I could do anything and there would be no consequences, you know?
Time to test that theory, buddy.
After a few moments, the Snail Earnhardt returns. And he speaks to you in your mind again. He goes, "Well, I spoke to all my kin, and they're all grateful for the offer. However... most of my kinfolk here are kind of beholden to Dimitri and what he's doing here. So they're politely declining the chance to adventure. However, your vitality and your will, your desire to have grand adventure is something to respect. And so with that, we'd like to offer you a gift." And so he's one moment into his shell.
Nell's wiping tears off her face. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to adventure. That's all right.
He appears, and one of the ice stocks sets down this little tiny shell. He sets it in front of you. He goes, "Now this is a special shell. If ever, and I mean ever, you need me or my kin to help you in whatever the capacity that is, you take this shell and you whisper, 'Shelly,' set it down. We'll come running as fast as we can to help you out."
Is this like a one-time use?
I don't rightly know. It's kind of a weird magic thing, and being fae, you can never tell with magic. But be that as it may, I guarantee it'll work at least once. Beyond that, I have nothing to do. But let me just say this from the bottom of my shell. Don't ever stop adventuring. You've got an adventurer spirit, and I believe you're gonna be one for the books.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Of course.
My heart is broken, but I'm happy that you're staying here with Dimitri, if that's what you truly wish. If you ever come across another with an adventurer spirit... please remember me. I love your kind.
He reaches out, touches you with an ice.
It just sticks to your skin.
It's like those little
hands. And like as he does that, the rest of them begin to crowd around it also, one by one, graciously.
Bless you with their stalk.
By the end of it, your hair is just sopping.
like when a dog like licks it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's called a moistening. It doesn't happen to many people.
Yeah.
It's a sacred...
Sacred
ritual.
Yeah.
Yeah, Barrios is just in the corner of the stable like, why couldn't it have been me?
Okay, so you leave with the snail shell.
Okay, snail shell of destiny.
A summoning shell is what you can put down if you'd like. It is not an item in D&D Beyond.
I'm sure it's not. What are you talking about?
It's, yeah, because I have to come up with this bullshit. Mm-hmm. So, as all that is happening, we're going to go ahead and transition forward as we're coming to kind of the tail end of the day and prepare for what everyone wants to be a part of, the final fight of the century.
Oh.
Did you know there's a NASCAR Hall of Fame?
Yes.
Do you know that?
I know that as of 2 minutes ago.
Learn all kinds of stuff about race cars.
I feel like you knew a little bit more with those... I knew those
racers' names. I did not know they had a Hall of Fame.
As the day begins to descend into evening, everyone begins to amass by the middle docks where the floating platform has been raised and the fight of the century is taking place. Just off the side to the platform, there are several tents that have been set up for anyone who is approaching the platform to come up and speak and to prepare for everything. Several tents have been set aside for the fight to happen, and so in one of these tents you all can gather fairly easily as the day goes on to prepare for the fight. Connie, you are sitting in that tent on a small cot, letting Nell put the final touches on your robe and your costume to prepare for your entrance. The crowd outside, the energy is beginning to build out there, and there's like chanting going on, and the din of the crowd is literally beginning to drown out all other city noises as you're preparing for the fight this evening. As you are all in here getting ready to prepare, at the tent door there is a gentle knock, which, I mean, you can kind of hear. There's a gentle knock at the... Well, actually, no, there isn't a knock. The tent flaps, flies open, and as you're all kind of in here, and Uncle Zoo steps in, just kind of like rubbing his hands together. He's like,
oh boy.
All right, we done it. We're here. It's your final, it's your night. Connie, how you feeling, buddy?
Oh, I'm feeling great. Right as rain, Uncle Zoo.
Excellent.
This
love
gonna
it.
Be a great fight. How you feeling?
We're here. I'm ready for it. It's gonna be the fight of the century, man. I'm telling you, this is gonna be amazing. I have no words for it. It's just gonna be the best. Now, have you been eating any shrimp yet? Don't eat any shrimp, right?
Don't eat any shrimp.
No, we're not supposed to be doing that right now. This is the fight you're winning. We're not gonna be throwing up all over the place.
Oh right. Ooh, man, I just really like the shrimp, so I thought it was kind of like a tradition. I get it.
I celebrate it afterwards because we're focused on the fight now. All right, now get up here and give me some punches. We're gonna try this out. Give me some punches. Come on. He puts his hands up in anticipation.
I punch him.
Okay.
this well, fight's gonna be great.
It's gonna do flawless. All right. So you begin to spar a little bit with your uncle. Everyone else is just kind of preparing for the evening, watching, waiting. There's more movement at the front of the tent as, your mom and, both your sisters actually, come in here this time. All of them excited and kind of, chatting about how the fight's going to go. Your mom fussing over you as usual. Alice, your first sister, the magical one, and then the other sister who hasn't arrived yet, Petra, is the other one, and she is now here. Much shorter, looks a lot like your mother with kind of short, cropped black hair. She's much more quiet, but she nods at all of you respectfully after introductions are passed around, and just kind of watches Connie as he's warming up with his uncle. But as the kind of the pleasantries die down. You can hear the crowd picking up. And after a few minutes, Uncle Zoo kind of steps back. He's like, all right, I think this is it. You ready to do this?
Yeah, Connie breaks off and goes and hugs Petra and like picks her up and is like, Petra, it's so good. I'm so glad you could make it for the fight.
Oh, kind of. Thank you. Thanks, Connie. You're kind of crushing me here, but it's all right.
It's... Yeah, you're tough. You can handle it.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Looking around here with all my friends and all my family, it's just got me thinking, you know? I just became lord of this manor. I didn't tell you guys about this, probably. The keep. It's you know, it was the deck of men, lots of things caught. It gave me some stuff. Anyway, I was thinking, like, after the festival and everything, it might be cool to, like, I don't know, you know, really work on bringing this family together. I thought maybe we could, I don't know, yeah, get closer as a family, Uncle Zoo.
Uncle Zoo kind of, he looks at you, Zoo. Of course, yeah. Of course, Connie, whatever you want to do. Hey, it's vacation, whatever you want to do, I'm sure we can make it happen. There's nothing. Once the fight's over, the world's our oyster, man. We're going to be, the Bravos will be doing what they do, thriving, surviving, having a great time, and you'll be the number one contender out here. So, yeah, we can go wherever you want. We head to the capital. We can head anywhere in Udall, wherever you want to go.
Can we do an insight check?
Yeah, make an insight check.
As he's saying that, he's kind of like, the fight of the century is a non-title match?
Well, it's 100% a title match.
But he said he's going to be the number one contender for the title.
Yeah. And he'll be the one with the title.
So
people will be contending for his number one.
He's going to be contend.
He'll be the contender. People will be contending for. Is that how it goes?
No, he will be the champion.
Oh. Well, hey, you'll be a champion. It's even better.
Connie, we need to talk about your management.
Don't I know it?
I'm here for fashion and fashion alone.
What'd you roll, Connie?
Huh?
You roll your insight?
13.
He seems fine with it. Doesn't seem like it. It seems like an odd request for you to, like, you don't haven't really talked about going anywhere, but he's, yeah, there's nothing odd about his response. As everyone is, as all of this is happening, and as the crowd is beginning to chant and everything like that, your uncle's like, all right, let's get ready. It's showtime. You ready to go?
Honestly, like, why are we even waiting? I listen to that crowd. They're worked up.
Let's do it. And as he turns around to, kind of lead you out there, the tent flap app opens one more time. And stepping in, there are four individuals who none of you have seen before, but they are all the stockiest and most well-dressed individuals you've ever seen. They walk in with determination and alertness. Mm-hmm. And after all four of them step in, a fifth individual steps in. This man is wearing a large golden yellow like main jacket almost that reaches down to his feet. Large rings adorn every single finger.
Tacky.
He carries this chain.
Watch your mouth.
This chain that holds the top of the main connects to a large amulet that sits right on his chest.
Does it look like an upside down pyramid?
Does he say, I pity the fool?
No. But he steps in, his long hair is pulled back, slick, and a beard neatly trimmed into a point. As he steps in, the wrinkles around his face tell of a very, very old age, but carries himself without the slightest hint of infirmary. But as he steps in, all of you regard him as like, ooh, who's this guy? Everyone else immediately recognizes Grandfather Leo, the head of the Brava family.
Gasp.
Thank you, Zook.
Matt has a catchphrase.
As Grandfather Leo steps in, his eyes immediately take in every single one of you, and look directly at Connie. And with just the slightest whisper of a word, but carrying immense amounts of power, he goes, "Leave." And immediately, all of the Bravas out the tent.
Oh, did he mean us as well?
I think he just meant Bravas.
Oh, easy.
He continues to stare at you.
Just kidding, scurrying on.
I'm gonna go visit Grandmother Willow.
Which is different from Grandfather Leo, I think.
Zook grabs the bowl of shrimp he was gonna give Connie and starts walking out.
Which leaves Connie with you, the four individuals, the four guards, and your grandfather. He walks up to you, grabs you by the shoulders, immediately embraces you, kisses you on both cheeks, pulls away and kind of holds you at arm's length. And you can see this ever so slight smile kind of creeps onto his mouth. And he goes,
"My son, you're doing so well. I had to come back and see this fight of the century that everyone's talking about."
He looks you up and down. This one of the projects I've been working on.
He looks you up and down.
"What the hell are you wearing?"
A mesh tank top.
Oh.
Perplexing gaps.
Pop, this is the way of the future. I'm telling you, marketing. That is what has been missing from fights. We have not been tapping this resource. I mean, you know, we used to fill little dingy, you know, fight clubs, but we can fill arenas and we can create storylines. And
when Connie turns around,
eats it up, and they know it's fake. It's beautiful. I mean, we're printing money.
When Connie turns around, cheeks.
Ass chaps. Your grandfather.
For sure. That's canon.
Your grandfather looks you over and nods slowly and goes,
"Well, the proof is in the examples. You've shown you can do it. That's impressive. I'm proud of you. Listen, I've returned from the capital because I feel you and I need to have a conversation. One that I unfortunately have not been able to have with the members of my family as of yet. But I believe you're ready for it."
And he kind of walks.
I think that would be a good idea.
He kind of nods.
"We need some change in this family. I think you're the one to do it."
And he kind of pauses for a moment. There's a hesitation in what he's about to say. And then he kind of pulls himself back together very quickly and is,
"But after, not before. Go. Fight your fight. Make us proud. And after, we'll talk."
The gravity of what he thinks may be being said by his grandfather is like he's not really willing to accept it. He's in pre-fight mode, you know, and like he hears the words but doesn't want to ruminate on whether or not it's what he hopes for, you know, because that's too big for him to think about during a fight.
Sure.
All right. Well, then I'll see you after the fight. And this one's for you, Pop.
This time he cracks a smile at the mention of his of your name for him. And he brings you in. And instead of the formal kind of like embrace that he did beforehand, he actually pulls you in and holds you there for a second. and just kind of doesn't say anything, just holds you for a moment, and then lets go, quickly regains composure of himself, lets you go, and is,
get after it.
And then, without saying another word, turns around and walks out, the four guards immediately following.
He stealthily hides a small tear that appears at the corner of his eye. I have a plus 10 to stealth, so I think I get away with that.
Mm. Yeah, of course, of course.
Make a stealth check.
As you wipe that away, a few moments pass, and then a couple of your friends, I assume, re-enter, and your uncle as well, and he's like, all right, you ready?
I'm already past them.
All right, you push past and start walking through the crowd. As you make your way out into the streets and towards the ring itself, the crowd begins to erupt. There are sounds of cheers. You can see petals being tossed into the air. A couple of arcane pops and whirls of some prestidigitation being cast.
Spotlights?
There's magical light everywhere, mm-hmm. basically, but no like direct spotlights. It's just illuminating. Mm-hmm. There are around the ring itself and around the podium, there just seems to be almost like day. Like it's as bright as if the sun was out, but everywhere else out in the city, it is beginning to reach kind of that dusk where it's kind of hard to see now. Like you can't really see a lot of stuff just because the you haven't really adjusted to the dark yet, and it's still a little bit light out. As he said,
the actual arena, is there artificial, like a lot of artificial light creating, like just flooding this thing?
Yes.
Okay.
But as you step out into the, as you step out and up onto the platform, it slowly begins to rise up above and begin to move above the river so that everyone can see it. And as this happens, you can see there are, it rises up so everyone can see it. And there's almost this weird distortion where it seems like everything that's on the platform begins to enlarge to the point where even if you're 100 yards away, it's almost like you can see it in pretty good detail, actually. So everyone begins to watch it, and as this happens, you can see there's one individual in the middle of the ring who begins to announce using some sort of a thaumaturgy, and their voice is booming across the thousands, the hundreds of thousands, or the tens of thousands of people out in the city. And he begins to regale everybody with the story of his tonight, the fight of the century, where one who fell shall reclaim his glory, or will be ever sent as second best in the greatest fight this side of Udall. Crowds lose their minds. He goes, in this corner we have, and he begins to announce a hibiscus quencher who is standing there dripping in just this like oily sweat, about a 16 pack, if that's even possible, lines this guy as he is just standing there, stone faced, staring straight forward and just like not moving, but like looks like he's been preparing himself. All of the individuals who are attending him seem to be talking to him, like preparing him. But he continues to stare straight ahead, seemingly on one goal, and then begins to announce Connie on the other side, calling him obviously Connie the Reach, Connie the Comet, Constance Bravo, just all of the names that he has. And as that happens, the announcer snaps his fingers, and swoom, in the air appears this fighting belt. Which is not like the belts that we have where it's like a massive like thing in the middle and a bunch of stuff on it. Not like a cummerbund. It's more of a simple, almost like maybe like 2 or 3 inch wide leather belt with a couple of rivets on the back to attach it. And then encased across the front is just this beautiful magical script that seems to kind of like undulate and flash with these different colors, and there's some jewels set in it to give it a more ostentatious look, but it looks like a belt that anyone could like wear just day to day. It's not like
an
over the top
it's not what you're describing, but do you remember in the early 2000s where they had like LED belts that would like scroll?
Kind of, yeah.
Yeah,
that's exactly
like the belt buckles. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Pretty sure Pete Wentz had one when Fallout Boy was on tour.
I can tell you with certainty he did.
So that is announced, the belt is shown, and everyone is, again, cheering and hooping and hollering because it's getting crazy. But as the two face each other and kind of acknowledge, one another, the bell is rung and the fight begins. Connie, are you ready for this?
Oh, 100%.
All right, so let me go ahead and quickly give you a quick rundown of how this is going to work. Give me just a second. All right, so here's how this is going to work. You are going to get 3d6 that you roll. And this is going to be very straightforward. I don't want to make this super elaborate and hard to kind of keep track of, but it's basically going to be 3d6 versus 3d6. Whoever wins the best of three in that roll wins that round. Three rounds and the game is over. So it's if you score two higher than him or three higher than him, you win that round. But if he does, he wins. And however the dice fall, the dice fall. And that's how this game goes. And then you can elaborate how you want the fight to kind of progress as it goes on. But this is just basically a brawler fest.
So let the dice dictate the outcome and then elaborate.
Correct. And then you can elaborate however you want to do it. So the fight begins. And you were expecting this to be kind of be a straightforward, like, all right, I'm here to reclaim my honor, stuff like that. It immediately strikes you that for some reason, Hibiscus Squalor is not... Hibiscus Quencher.
He's not.
That sounds cooler.
Even better. That's the next one you fight. Hibiscus Quencher is not holding back. He immediately sets off and begins to assault you with a fury of blows that you did not expect, which immediately send jarring shock up your body as you try to block these oncoming attacks. But we will go ahead and roll and see what happens.
Roll.
All right. For the first round, I'll go ahead and call out what he does, and then you can tell me what yours are or if they meet or beat. So his first three rolls are as follows. A 2, a 3, and a 6.
No, that's so easy to beat.
I got 2, 3, and 2.
So you meet one, so you beat it. He beats you. 2, 3, 2. You meet two of them, technically.
Yeah.
So he beats you. Beats you. Yeah, so this round goes to him because you meet two of them but do not beat his 6. So the first round is immediately takes you by shock as he begins to assault you with pummels, gets you up against the railing, kind of catches you with a couple of haymakers to the sides where it brings your arms up to your face to kind of block them, and he immediately comes in with an uppercut that catches you off guard, sends you reeling into the panel. The crowd, going from ecstatic cheers and wild kind of yelling, immediately begins to dim as they realize, like, oh no, like, this looks more like a let that man in there with his fighter and not a, oh, this is going to be a fun fight. Much to the displeasure of a lot of people, including many of the Bravas who are all ringside with you, or not ringside, but down at the docks with you guys, who immediately begin to, like, look at each other with fear in their eyes as they realize, like, this is not going the way it should.
Connie!
All right. End of that round, you kind of stumble back, beginning to feel blood kind of forming around parts of your, some bruises beginning to form, a little bit of swelling near your face, and a little bit of blood from your chin where he caught you with the uppercut. This is now round 2. He is up by 1. You have to win both these rounds in order to come away victorious in this. Go ahead and roll your 3d6 and tell me what your numbers are.
I don't know how that advantage for a round would work in this instance, but five rounds. No, can't be that.
It's just straight rolls.
I don't know. Okay. Maybe reroll 1.
Yeah, you could reroll 1 if that works.
I'm trying to see if I would win the fight.
Oh, really? How are you doing so far?
I'll let you know when you tell me.
Roll the 2.
Yeah,
I got a 3. So I got 4, 6, 3.
4, 6, and 3.
Okay.
He rolled a 1, a 2, and a 4. So even...
1, 2, what?
1, 2, and 4. So nice. Even with his best roll, he still does not beat you. You are going to win this round clean. Go ahead and tell me what Connie begins to do to counteract this onslaught. Because as he steps back, giving you kind of a minute to... Just the briefest moment of reprieve, The bell doesn't ring to stop the rounds. This is just until someone until someone quits.
So I think with that first round, Connie, the first two hits that he blocked were like he was just thinking, man, that's a little harder than we were planning, you know. And he was planning on throwing some, nice effects. He's got the minor illusion. He was going to throw some like blood splatters and stuff like that. But he's like, oh crap, this guy's really hitting me. And then when that one lands right on his face, just stares into his eyes and sees that this is for real. He's been double crossed.
Mm-hmm.
Can we see, like, do we perceive any of this happening?
Yeah, you immediately notice the fight is not going in his favor.
So
you won the second round.
This is still first round.
Oh boy.
Attack. He just flips around behind him using acrobatics, just like spins around behind him off the rope and just pummels him three times in the back of the skull.
You don't have to do it three times. This is just like over the course of the round that based on it. So these rounds are probably going to take. These rounds are probably going to take a few minutes per round. So this isn't just going to be a quick fight. This is probably going to be a 10-15 minute like brawl kind of a thing. So in the first 5 minutes, you are on the ropes the entire time. But the next 5 minutes, you are beginning to come back with a lot of flair and panache and begin to use your speed to your advantage as he is swinging wildly, connecting on a few hits, but not as hard as he was beforehand. And it seems to be now kind of taking a couple of hits as well. Is there anything you're targeting on him other than just like general blows, or is there anything you want to like target
liver,
in this fight?
Go for the liver.
Yeah, what's exposed? Oh yeah, his big old
yeah, okay.
Back. If he's been working that much on the front, he's been neglecting the back, so I go for the kidneys.
Ooh, that's good call. Yeah. So you're dancing behind him, taking as many body shots to the kidneys as you can, causing him to grunt and stumble back several of the kick blows. One kick lands really, really nicely, and it kind of sends him stumbling for a moment, which gives you separation and a chance to breathe before everyone charges back in for their third round. So we're now 10 minutes into it. Both of them are sweating, bleeding. The fight is looking neck and neck at this point, but Connie's still shaken up from that really, really rough first 5 minutes. So anything, are you trying to attempt something?
Yeah. Okay. I would say we're probably ringside, especially me as like manager. Are we close enough? How close?
You know what? Sure, I'll go ahead and grant you that because you and there's nobody ringside as in like jumping in to help him at any point. But I would say you and Uncle Zoo would probably be near the ring, kind of like coaching along at this point.
Okay, Uncle Zoo, hide me. Just cover me.
I'm sorry. What?
I'm gonna try to cast antagonize on. On what's his butt? On Hibiscus.
Okay.
So I whisper a magical word. Quinjar. That's a magical word this time. That antagonize one creature of your choice within range, 30 feet.
Yep.
Target must make a wisdom saving throw. On a failed save, he takes 44 psychic damage and must immediately use his reaction to make a melee attack against another creature of my choice that I can see. if the target can't make this attack... he instead has disadvantage on the next attack roll before the start of my next turn. On a successful save, he takes
Incredible.
Half as much damage.
I love it. So we're going to go ahead and use the disadvantage portion of this to make him reroll one of his die.
Is the ref nearby? Because I'm having him punch the ref.
You're going to... So just so
Double
I'm clear, you're going to scrub this entire match and disqualify everyone for a cheap shot.
No.
Okay, just making sure. We're going to go ahead and give him disadvantage then based on this roll. So here's what we're going to have to do, because there's going to be a lot of mechanics here for this. You're going to have to roll a high enough sleight of hand check to make it to where no one notices you tampering with this.
Okay.
And there's a lot of people watching this. There are, again, tens of thousands of spectators and a lot of people on this platform.
Mm-hmm.
This is not going to be an easy roll. I'm going to tell you right now, DC is 20 for the sleight of hand check.
Do I get advantage because Uncle Zoo?
We're going to roll a performance check for Uncle Zoo to see how well he does.
Okay.
If he can beat a 10... then yes, you get advantage.
Okay.
You rolled 16.
Okay.
So he just kind of like grabs you and
puts you in front of him and kind of leans forward and like smacks the mat and he's like, come on, Connie, keep your feet moving, and like kind of presses you up there to kind of like cover you for a moment. And he goes, make it quick.
All
right,
so
I need you to make a sleight of hand check.
That is a natural 20.
Hey. There you go. Very nice. All right, within
I have to roll again if I have advantage. All right, okay. No, we didn't get a god roll. Just had to check.
There you go.
Oh, man.
You never know. Easier if you're rolling dice, just saying.
I don't. My dice are over there. Okay. Yeah.
You cast Antagonize, giving him disadvantage on the roll. You say, Quencha!
He does and need to make a wisdom saving throw.
What's the DC?
16. I don't want to completely negate that.
That is a 14. That is a
okay,
failure.
Sweet.
Is a wisdom save, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, then yes, it is a 14. It's a constitution. Oh, he beats that. No, so with a 14, he fails, so you whisper Quencher, and as he goes in for this kind of like overhand like hammer hit on Connie, he steps and kind of missteps.
It's
and kind
psychic of, damage like, if that hitches. Makes a difference, yeah.
There's no disadvantage. It's just it's the disadvantage on his roll. There's no damage.
Okay.
But he's going to swing down and kind of like hitches when he hears that and kind of throws him off his focus when he's going down for this hit. So now we come to the third and final roll. I'm going to go ahead and roll Quencher's three rolls, and one of them is going to be a disadvantage. I will take the highest and re-roll it. Okay. And then whatever that is, it is. And then Connie, you'll go ahead and roll your three and see if you beat his. He rolls a 3, a 5, and a 6, so I'm going to re-roll the 6.
And it's a 1.
It's a 1.
Oh. Let's go.
So, oh Connie, you need to beat a 1. You need to roll a 2 and a 4 or higher.
Never realized how long this is
going to be. 5, 2, 5.
Beats, you did it. With that, you successfully 5-2-5.
Yeah,
2 5s and a 2. Yeah, you beat. Because I was like 2 2s. I was like, ugh. Nope, it's 2 5. So yeah, you beat. So with that, how at the end of this grueling match, Connie, how do you emerge victorious?
Grab his dick and twist it.
Do not grab his dick and twist it.
Your dick twist.
I mean, you can if you want. It's kind of a brawl. It's not really a. There's no rules to this.
Grab his dick and twist it. Is that right, Will?
Yes, absolutely.
No. No, I think you know, seeing his buddy Nell, because Connie noticed naturally. he knew what Nell was doing.
He's a nat 20 dude. I don't know.
Being buoyed up by that bond of friendship,
mm-hmm.
He just busts out everything he's got in that last moment and does this whole like shadow step of the wind. Feather fall.
Drew's
just reading like, his entire character sheet.
He does
step
of the wind into the air,
mm-hmm.
like, and then slow falls down, but then like speeds up right at the last second and just stomps this guy on the head.
You begin to assault him with a fury of blows, and those who are around the arena watch this as you hit. Another punch follows, and another punch follows, and they begin to appear in rapid succession on his like upper chest and lower torso, in such a speed and ferocity that it looks as though 2, 4, 6, 8, 12 versions of Connie are beginning to like go and begin to assault him before he, swoom, in a moment of shadow, disappears from a haymaker by Hibiscus before swoom, appearing up in the air, slow motion spinning kick as. Quencher looks up and the heel of your foot wah, into the side of his face, a resounding crack as his jaw dislocates from the hit. He goes down to one knee, you land on both feet, and one final thing as he looks up at you, like tears welling in his eyes from the assault. What's your last thing that you do before you send him to the mat?
The Shadow Realm.
Fireball.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
What was that? Oh man, I can't remember that movie where. Oh yeah, Karate Kid,
mm-hmm.
where he like comes up to him and he's about to chop him right in the throat and he goes, "Live or die." And he goes, "Die." And Connie reaches out and tweaks his nose and goes, "Wrong."
You tweak Hibiscus Quencher's nose, and push, and he falls back, boom, onto the mat. As soon as he hits, the bell, boom, boom, dongs, and the crowd loses their mind. You hear the sounds of pops and explosions as fireworks begin to erupt across the entire city. You, looking from where you are, Nell, up on top of the platform, you can see out into the city itself, miles of city. There is explosions and fantastic lights explode.
Somebody expended a skyride spell. It says Connie.
There's skyride spells.
There's one that says let's go Connie. The next one says hibiscus. Back and forth.
It's Zook's crazy. Throwing handfuls of shrimp into the air.
Just throwing shrimp into the air. The crowds are going wild. As Hibiscus Quencher lands on the mat and is pulled away, Nell and your Uncle Zoo immediately surge up onto the mat, kind of lift you up. Your uncle picks you up and kind of sets you on his shoulder as the ringside announcer kind of walks up and hands you, extends out the belt, the championship belt, and goes, "Congratulations, sir," and hands it to you. And he goes, "Ladies and gentlemen, the champion of Utah, Connie the Rage!" The crowd loses their mind. You hold the belt high. Excitement and glee just kind of emanating from everything around you. And a little bit of trepidation, as in the back of your mind, you know the night is not quite over. And that is where we are going to leave you all tonight, with the high of Connie's victory before whatever else.
The high hibiscus.
Before anything else happens, we're going to go ahead and call that there. So, well done, Connie. That was, the dice told the story. So, that was well done by you. So,
I was waiting for a Spider-Man 1 reference.
Uh-huh.
Either, you know, when the Flying Dutchman's car, oh, God, my leg!
It's a nice dress.
What's your name, kid? Connie? That name sucks.
That was a good fight. But yeah, so we'll go ahead and end it there. Thank you all so much for playing. Thank you all so much for watching and listening. This has been the Wild Magic School Bus with your world champion, Connie the Reach. Good night, everybody.
Wait, I thought he was number one contender.
He is.
For the world championship.
No, he is the world champion.
Contending for his own world championship?
Correct.
Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to the Wild Magic School Bus. We really hope that you have as much fun listening to this as we have making every new episode, which comes out each Monday on whatever podcast platform you use. While you're there listening, leave a review. It actually helps us out. If you want to watch us be unprofessional, you can check us out on our YouTube channel to see the whole gang in action. If you want to support the show, you can join our Patreon. Do that. That would be really cool. There you'll find early access to the show and ad-free episodes and more. You can check out our socials. Just search the Wild Magic School Bus on your favorite one and give us a like or a follow or whatever you do on those. We're always happy to make new friends. See you next time.
I'm going to play in the back. It feels like one of those. I'm not going to do that because that's copyright.
But I'm feeling 22.
We're going to need copyright strike for that.
100%.
Okay.
What?
I'm trying not to be rude.
Do you want to get despiration at the start of the episode?
No.
What if Calvin handed that out?
Despiration?
Yeah, like a negative Nancy inspiration.
Oh. Like, who's the worst?
Thinking about it now.
You know what? Whoever's got the worst outfit is going to get a negative D20 whenever I
This loosely relates to what we were talking about, but I saw something on the internet that said if Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce have a kid, like, they're going to have the Troy Bolton that won't be able to, like, decide whether or not he wants to pursue his love of music.
Oh, my God.
And I thought that was funny.
Do I become the greatest pop star of all time or the greatest tight end of all time?
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes into physics or something.
He goes into physics and saves the world? Yeah, I'm here for it. I'm here for it.
I'm pretty sure if they have a kid, it's going to come out solid gold. So it'll basically be Adam Warlock. So yeah, that sounds about right.
There we go.
Taylor Swift's already pretty tall.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, that kid's probably going to be a really tall kid.
Maybe. We don't know the genetics. Oh,
and then it can get in a fight with Baron Trump.
I mean, at least on the dad side, the genetics.
That's the next
two
contender residency.
Oh my gosh. We fast forward 40 years from now, and it's Travelor Swift versus Baron Trump for the fate of the universe. I'd watch it.
I'd like to be alive to watch it. Pay per view? Yeah, I'm here for it.
In a no holds barred match, brother. Drew is incorrigible tonight. This is going to be a
Drew,
problem.
Are you tucked into bed now?
No, he's tucked against bed now. He keeps saying this is where the magic happens, and it's starting to make me feel kind of weird.
Oh, buddy.
Oh, no. He looks like the Sith that's just staying at the place taking care of the rest of the Sith.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll keep it short tonight for you, Drew. That way you don't have to suffer through too much.
Oh, no. Don't do anything on my account.
You son of a bitch.
I hate that I love him so much.
I know. It's the curse of being friends with Drew is that you end up hating that you love him.
If that's the glorious cross to bear, though.
That is the cross to bear, unfortunately.
Wait, I missed it. What is the curse?
Yep.
That we hate how much we love you sometimes.
Yeah, was that Beyonce that sang that song?
Yeah. Don't look to me, I don't know.
Well, I wasn't going to look at Matt Burlingame.
Actually about me.
Actually.
Oh, goodness.
I'm quite really into the queen.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.